Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Pavla Horakova and we start with the news. The Prime Minister and acting head of the Social Democrats, Stanislav Gross, has been nominated for the post of party chairman by the Central Bohemian branch of the party. So far, Mr. Gross has received 11 nominations from regional branches, while his challenger, Labour and Social Affairs Minister Zdeněk Škromach, has received only one. The Social Democrat Party will elect its new chairman at a national congress in March. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Stanislav Gross has said he won't comment further on how he financed the purchase of his luxury apartment in Prague. Recently, the daily Mladá fronta Dnes found out that Mr. Gross's flat cost more than he had officially earned. The controversy surrounding the purchase took a new turn on Friday when former journalist Rostislav Rod said he had lent money to Mr. Gross's uncle, who in turn lent some of it to the Prime Minister. The daily Mladá fronta Dnes says this is a third explanation the public have been given by Mr. Gross's family since the controversy broke out. Czech officials have refused to reveal details about the companies that had submitted preliminary offers for the state's 51.1% stake in the telecommunications company Český Telecom. The deadline for submitting non-binding offers passed on Thursday. Six European telecommunications companies, France Telecom, Belgacom, Swisscom, Telefonica, TDC and Vodafone, as well as four financial groups, had shown interest in taking control of Český Telecom. Denmark's TDC, however, announced that it had decided to pull out of the tender. Unusually good skiing conditions have attracted thousands of skiers to Bohemian and Moravian mountains, causing traffic jams on the narrow mountain roads. The Mountain Rescue Service recommends to skiers to leave their cars in special car parks in lower altitudes and use trains and shuttle buses instead. Some towns have even stopped allowing cars in. Most mountain resorts report between 60 and 220 centimeters of snow, clear skies and daytime temperatures slightly above 0 degrees Celsius. The Czech men's tennis number one Jiří Novák has reached the semifinals of the Millennium International Championships at Delray Beach, Florida, after beating seventh-seeded Kenneth Carlsen of Denmark 6-3, 7-5 on Friday. Second-seeded Novák will play South African Wesley Moody on Saturday. It is Novák's first tournament of the season. The 29-year-old took January off to spend time with his family. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The weather should continue to be sunny to partly cloudy, with daytime temperatures hovering around 0 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková and that's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Peter Smith. Coming up later in today's programme, there'll be another letter from Prague, this week written by Ian Willoughby, and also Rob Cameron will be introducing us to Tomáš Radil, an Auschwitz survivor, in one-on-one. But before then, we'll start with magazine. And parents queue up overnight in sub-degree temperatures to enrol their children in a prestigious school. The New York Times goofs, those three fat ladies are not Brazilian, they are Czech, and drink less so you can drink longer. The ground rule when you are tasting brandy all day. More of that in magazine with Daniela Lazarova.
Krakonoš is a well-known Czech storybook figure, the old man who guards the mountain, who is all-powerful and just and protects the trees, birds and animals, a sort of elderly bearded environmentalist. Many Czech generations have grown up on Krakonoš bedtime stories and Krakonoš books. Some mountain villages have him as a mascot. For instance, in the town of Jilemnice, there is a generation of artists, grandfather, father and son, who have created snow sculptures of him ever since 1941. Usually he appears with the start of the new year, but since the snowfall came late this year, Josef Dufek despaired of putting the monumental guardian of the mountains together. In the end, 50 lorries of snow helped, and Krakonoš is once more in his place, facing his kingdom, the Krkonoše Mountains. The statue, sculpted in snow, is 8 meters tall and has become a major tourist attraction. The above Another maternity ward recently experienced a major upheaval. A bat somehow got into the department where several young mothers were waiting to give birth and circled desperately round in an effort to find its way out. It gave the patients a bit of a scare, but luckily one of the nurses faced up to this unexpected challenge and trapped the intruder in a cardboard box. She got the privilege of having a picture taken with it when the media arrived along with the pest control team. We're very grateful for such a practical approach, the head of the team said. Most people get so panicked by being in a closed space with a bat that they just beat it to death with anything within reach. Czechs have pretty much forgotten what it is like to have to queue up for something for long hours. Now the parents of first graders in Ostrava got a taste of déjà vu when some 70 families queued up overnight in the freezing cold weather in order to enroll their kids in a prestigious language school. People started forming a line at around 9 p.m. on Sunday and stood in line all night in sub-degree temperatures without even a guarantee that their child would actually get on the list, since the number of places was limited. Whole families took part, with grandmothers and granddads taking their turn to keep the family's place in the queue, drinking hot tea or something more warming straight out of the bottle. One parent actually arrived with a caravan which he parked close to the queue so that his lot could take turns to warm up. In a show of solidarity, he let others use it as well, but it was far too small, so people had to rely on hot drinks and hopping up and down in the cold. Clearly, Czech parents are beginning to realize just how important language skills are for their children. Three Czech ladies are very angry. They got their picture taken, cellulite and all, as they were relaxing on Rio de Janeiro's Ipanema beach. Not only did the photographer fail to obtain their permission, but the photo later appeared in an article in the New York Times illustrating a story on obesity in Brazil. The article was based on a government study that said more than 40% of Brazilians were overweight and played up Brazil's self-image as a haven of sunny sexiness. It's not clear whether the paper's photographer failed to find any fat Brazilian ladies on the beach, but the fact is that he took a picture of three Czech ones and passed them off for Brazilian girls. "Certainly I'm not a girl from Ipanema, I'm a woman of a certain age," said 59-year-old Milena Suchoparova in an interview for one of Brazil's biggest dailies, Globo. According to Reuters, which picked up the story, the Brazilian media are equally affronted, running the story under the title "New York Times Screw Up" and questioning the paper's ethics and credibility. A new boarding school near Žičany is due to open next year, and what makes it special is that it will be the only boarding school in the Czech Republic, moreover the only school which has a prescribed school uniform. A boarding school of this type existed in post-war Czechoslovakia briefly, but was later closed down by the communist regime. The old school took in both talented war orphans who studied on grants and children from well-off families. Among its graduates are the former Czech president Václav Havel and the famous Czech-born film director Miloš Forman. The present-day school wants to operate in a similar way, the fees from those who can afford it paying for the education of those who cannot and deserve the chance. Plenty of Czechs make their own homemade brandy or slivovice, and when they get together, usually with a few bottles of this local fire water, the main topic of conversation is always whose brandy is better. Richard Jaronek from Vizovice says that after a few years of listening to these disputes in the pub, he'd had enough. So 11 years ago, he organized an annual contest for the best homemade brandy and created a popular tradition. We take it quite seriously, he says, and there are side competitions for the worst brandy and the biggest jerk of the year. A team of local brandy experts make up the jury, and they taste all the samples on an anonymous basis, grading them from 1 to 5. The winner gets a trophy, the loser a special brew concocted from the remains of all the brandies tested, a deadly mixture according to those in the know. The annual competition has become so popular that people from other parts of the country have asked to be allowed to take part, and it's now open to all. The ground rule on Slivovice tasting day is drink less so you can drink longer. If you don't make your own brandy and much prefer white wine, you can do a bit of sampling yourself. All in the interest of medical research, the Pilsen Faculty Hospital is looking for a group of 100 volunteers on whom it would test the effects of white wine consumption. Daily consumption, I should add. The conditions are that you need to be over age 40 and that while the experiment is underway, you must not drink any other kind of alcohol. Both male and female volunteers are welcome, and you will find the hospital's contact address on Radio Prague's website on magazine.
Magazine was written and presented by Daniela Lazarová, as usual. Moving on, though, another letter from Prague, though, on Radio Prague, written this week by Ian Willoughby.
T.G. Masaryk, the founder and first president of Czechoslovakia, gave the new state one memorable piece of advice. Ne bát se a ne krást. Don't be afraid, he said, and don't steal. But during the communist era, an equally well-known phrase arose. Ten, kdo nekrade, okrade rodinu. That means whoever doesn't steal deprives his family. It sometimes seems to me that the second philosophy still prevails, 15 years after the end of communism. Thievery is obviously not a phenomenon particular to the Czech Republic. But from time to time, I'm shocked at the things, often of little value, that people are prepared to pinch. There was something in the papers the other week about municipal wheelie dustbins disappearing. But they weren't spontaneously combusting. People were stealing them to use at their chalupy or country cottages. A colleague says she heard in Moravia about people stealing park benches with the same idea in mind. Now that's what I call a lack of community spirit. Then, of course, there are stories about people filling their pockets at events where there's free food. This I find particularly hard to understand, given that the fare on such occasions is usually classic Czech open sandwiches called chlebičky, and who wants a pocket full of butter and mayonnaise? A friend says the people in his building are super diligent about locking the front door, after door handles and light switches were stolen from the hallway. In this case, the thieves were probably drug addicts. Anyway, one of the residents scratched up all the replacement light switches to deter would-be thieves. Visitors to the Czech Republic will be familiar with toilet attendants, who charge you a few crowns to spend a penny, so to speak. Recently, I went to a metro station toilet, where there was a huge roll of toilet paper on the wall right by the attendant's station. Is there also toilet paper in the cubicles, I asked. The old lady looked at me as if I'd asked the daftest question of all time, and said, "Sir, do you think I would hazardovat with the toilet paper?" Hazardovat meaning take risks with. By which she clearly meant that if there was paper in the cubicles, some jokers would steal it. And the very sad thing is, I'm sure she was right.
Thank you very much there to Ian Willoughby for that letter from Prague. Finally, though, our feature on Radio Prague today is the interview programme One on One, and this week Rob Cameron has a very interesting guest.
My guest in this week's one-on-one is Auschwitz survivor Tomáš Radil, a retired professor of psychology and neurology. Tomáš Radil was 13 and a half when he was sent to Auschwitz with his family after they were deported from their hometown of Parkany, now Štúrovo, in Slovakia in the spring of 1944. Most of his relatives were murdered, only his father survived. He was one of several thousand inmates who witnessed the camp's liberation by the Red Army on January the 27th, 1945. When I visited Professor Radil at his flat below Prague's Vyšehrad fortress, I asked him for his most enduring memory of life in Auschwitz.
I just recall one occasion, that all the time something like that. It is just an illustration. Okay, so there is a prisoner who somehow lost his nerves. And the SS for some reason told him, put down your glasses. And he has refused. So he has refused to obey the authority of the SS, which had to be absolute. So there was a gate, because there was some sort of store at that railroad station of Auschwitz. And just pulled the guy, the prisoner, inside, behind that door, that big gate, and shot him. We have not seen how he did it. I have just seen that before doing that, he simply took his gun. And we have seen nothing. It was like in a movie. It is like when you watch the killing, and in order you are not shown the brutality. So, and I see now how his blood is just pouring out below the gate, and the Alsacian German shepherd is just coming, sniffing and licking that blood of that poor guy who had been killed there behind that. All the time something like that. I was listening all the time, you know. You could listen the sound of the cannonade, the war coming. You could hear how it increases. So I was judging, I remember that. Also, I was a little boy, that they are approaching extremely fast.
This is around January the 27th when Auschwitz is liberated.
No, it was before.
Before
that?
It
was before, days before. The first wave of the prisoners who were in working condition, work conditions so they could walk. They have left maybe 8 or I don't remember how many days before the Russians came in. After the Germans left, some sort of international organization, a secret one, took over, so it was no chaos. They gave some task to some people, and because I belonged among the young ones who could move.
Sorry, just to get this straight, that there was a gap between when the Germans left and when the Russians arrived, and the camp was run by someone else.
Yeah, and that was some sort of organization of the prisoners.
What organization?
Who knows? I did not know. I even don't know it today. Those people did not ask for publicity.
What do you remember about January the 27th when the Russians arrived?
The 27th was just a usual day. With another boy, they sent me to the gate to watch what is happening outside the camp. There was no information. And the instruction was, there are two of you. One should watch all the time, and if necessary, the second will run as a messenger to some other place and tell the story, what is happening outside. And that was in the building, to the first building to the left, the main gate, Auschwitz main camp, that Arbeit macht frei, you know. And to the left side, the first building was a building of the orchestra. There used to be an orchestra of the camp, so camp music is playing, and all those commanders are marching outside the camp that belong to the ritual. Okay, so we were just playing like little boys with those instruments, and I'm watching from the window, everywhere snow, flat place, and I see a German soldier running, I would say, metaphorically, running towards the west, and pulling his rifle after him. Carrying a rifle is not easy, so he was pulling the rifle, and I even remember that the belt of that rifle was not made out of leather, but was some sort of a textile imitation. You know, that guy is just, I was even a sort of sorry for him in a sense, you know, not very deeply, but That was like a symbol of the breakdown of the Third Reich.
So you knew then that the end was coming.
That was the end. I see he's running. Only one guy. So out of any type of organized mass movement, which is typical for an army, he just was running in order he saves his bloody life. That was all. And after 1 hour or so, the Russians came in with tanks, you know, very fast-moving troops, with some horse and some sort of carriages with horses, and the great majority very young boys. And they came in and said, okay, here we are. And just symbolically, they ran with the tanks through the fences, which was a manifestation, it is over now.
What did you feel then?
I felt a very fast, very, very short-lasting sort of feeling of happiness. It is just no one knew that time, but that is like a consequence of when the endogenic opioids are liberated in your body. You are like happy, very happy, but that lasts for a very short period only. Because, you know, after a very short time, almost everyone, had the sort of a strange, extremely sad feeling, very depressive. Because the immediate goal broke down. The goal was to survive. Okay, now we have survived. No, what further? We knew almost everyone has been killed. Now a new goal came, which was very much more complicated to adapt to. That was, what are we going to do?
What did you do?
So what I did, it was basically, the choice was not so difficult for me, because I was just an adolescent child. So I told to myself, I go home, because I saw my father could be alive and return from somewhere. I thought also erroneously, unfortunately, but that my mother could return. Maybe someone else will return. I knew that the great majority will not return. And as all the war moved from the east to the west, I felt that I have to move from the west to the east.
How do you think Auschwitz changed you as a person?
Certainly deeply. The famous moneymaker and altruist, Soros, made a statement here, some sort of book, that those who have survived became in a way very strong people, you know, they are tested, yeah, and by all type, they somehow, at least me, I know in advance what I'm going to do, you know, because nothing is really so serious. It is still one point which was damaging, that somehow I did forget to a great extent to be afraid, which is harmful, because you are afraid, you know, that helps you, because that is holds you back not to get into dangerous situation. I somehow forget it, you know, I'm not afraid of anything, which is bad. Nothing left to be afraid of.
Now you've seen Auschwitz, there is nothing which could possibly frighten you anymore.
No.
Professor Radil, thank you very much.
Okay, it was my pleasure.
In this week's One-on-One, Rob Cameron was in conversation with the Auschwitz survivor, Tomáš Radil. And we're just about out of time here on Radio Prague for today. A quick reminder, though, of our contact details if you'd like to write in to us with any comments or queries about our programmes, or indeed about life here in the Czech Republic. The address, Radio Prague, 12099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic. Once again, Radio Prague, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. And the email, of course is english@radio.cz. english@radio.cz. I'm going to go and have a quick beer now, see if that fixes my speech impediment today. Thank you. Until next time, from me, Peter Smith. Bye-bye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Ondes courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 8h30, 8h57. Europe, 9880, 11600. 17h30, 17h57. Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 15710. 19h30, 19h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 9430, 23h, 23h27, Amérique du Nord, 5930, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.